I first off have to thank both Paul and Anna for an excellent lead-in to what I'm going to talk about. A number of years ago, the USDA, in its wisdom, decided that 50% of the biofuels could come from the Deep South, simply because they look at it and says you've got the land, you've got the water, and you've got the sun. But nobody said where it's going to come from. So I'm going to show you what we've been doing. You had an introduction to Energy Cane. That's one of the keys to our program. And I'm going to see if I can, I'm a little out of my element here, say, talking to people who grow plants all the time. So I'm going to see if I can twist your thinking a little bit and come at it from the backside. Okay, an AFRICAP program. A lot of you have been involved in them. You know there's a lot of moving parts in it. This is just some of the ones that we were charged with. That is to find suitable crops, low-input farming, fermentable sugars, make sure there's biomass sugars, be able to make fuels, and make sure the economics work. That's just some of it. There's obviously a lot more. Government tend to add things when they think they can get it. And this just kind of shows you the status where we think we are on this particular grant. We've been 4 years into it now. When we started, we said, well, we have to have a crop. What's ideal and what's practical? Ideal, if we're going to build a plant, we will have to have feedstock year-round. So we want year-round availability, you know, 12-month harvest. Unfortunately, crops have a single harvest season, and we're not going to get a 12-month harvest. We want high yields. Well, that depends on what species you're using. Wide range. Climate, soil, water, all of that changes across an area. What crop works best where. Low input. They're all worried about carbon balance. How much fertilizer do we have to put in? What about herbicides? How about fuel for the tractors? All of these things. A lot of it's required, but we have to pick a crop then where the carbon balance looks good. We want minimal agricultural and environmental disruption. We're not going to be able to put these crops in to make a biofuel in an area that's growing corn. Corn's worth more. Or a food crop. Definitely nothing with food crops. Risks were slapped on that right off. Says do not touch. And the question is then, too, there's land there, and what happens if you put new row crops into existing land, crop cover? How's that going to affect the wildlife? How's that going to affect the runoff? And finally, and most important, is it economically sustainable? Well, that's obviously dependent on both oil prices and what products you're making. And we all know the price of oil has gone down. My little worms in the oil industry tell me it's going to stay down maybe 5 years. So that affects investments and all of that sort of thing. So we took two crops to start with. We chose energy cane, and which you now all know are experts in energy cane, and sweet sorghum. And we looked at it and said, okay, what are we trying to deal with? We're trying to make sugars. Cellulosic sugars, simple sugars, it doesn't matter because in the end all we want is sugars. And so how much sugar per acre can we get? Well, we look at energy cane, it is like commercial sugar cane, a lot less sugar, more fiber. But it still has sugar, simple sugar. So we've got 123 pounds of simple sugar per ton approximately in energy cane. And then we have all the cellulosics and the hemicellulosics, and that's a lot more. So if we look at total pounds per acre, say for energy cane, we're getting over 12,000 pounds per acre of sugars, if we can convert them all. And of course, we all know you can't do 100% of anything. Similar thing with sweet sorghum. Well, sweet sorghum doesn't look as good, but why did we do sweet sorghum? Paul pointed that out. We need 12-month deliverables to a plant. Nobody's going to run a plant, unlike our commercial sugar plants, which get away with it because they've been around for 200 years and they're all paid off. But nobody's going to build up a new plant that's going to run only 3 months a year. So, staggered harvests. Two crops, staggered harvest, and try and fill in the gap with stored materials, syrups, bagasse, that sort of thing. Now, the products we're looking at are sugars. I said, we've got two sets of sugars. We've got simple fermentable sugars, which are present in juices right off, just like with sugar, and it's both present in energy cane and in sweet sorghum. Now, these are fermentable sugars. It's not sucrose. It's sucrose plus glucose plus fructose. That doesn't matter if you're going to go to a fermentation process. And if you can start with these crops right off, you've got a moneymaker while you're figuring out what you're going to do with the back-end biomass cellulosics, which has not been completely figured out, shall we say. Where you grow it, Paul talked about Winnsboro. That's the northern end of those upper stars in Louisiana. That's where we started. The energy cane seems to be doing decently up there, which for us is surprising because all the sugar cane is only down in the very low region. Turns out it's partially because, A, the higher fiber, yes, but B, we're not so interested in sucrose. We've restricted our sugar cane to that lower region simply because we want the highest sucrose levels. We're more interested in tonnage. And that was, you've seen this slide, that's energy cane. That's 2 years in North Louisiana. We're looking at not replanting at least for 6 years, a minimum. And I understand there's been some energy cane crops that have gone 20 years without a replant. This is a perennial crop, so you cut the planting down, you cut the cost of the farmer down. And you've seen this. There's a whole range of crops available that can be harvested at various times, depending on what you're looking at. And same sort of thing here. Yields are tonnage yields on the bottom, somewhere between 40 and 60 some odd tons, wet tons per acre, depending on which energy cane crop you use. Dry matter is somewhat less, but 13 to 24 is still pretty good. I understand they're quite happy in switchgrass with, what, 3 to 4?
They'd like to get 12.
If they're lucky.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So we're happy with these numbers. And that, again, gives us August through March in terms of a deliverable to a processing plant. Then the EPA came out with their what's going to be a cellulose crop and what's not going to be a cellulose crop for the RINs, the payments they're giving for biomass crops. And it turns out essentially all of the energy cane crops fall as an energy crop, not a sugar crop. So they would be eligible for this sort of payment. We talked about briefly about surviving the quote cold. And I know anybody from up north laughs at what we consider cold. Basically, it doesn't matter whether we're finding, at least in the north part of Louisiana, it doesn't matter whether you leave residue on the top or you burn it off. The crop survives perfectly well because down in the soil temperature where the crop is, it doesn't really change. And that actually, leaving the residue on is a serious question for us because we prefer to bring the residue in, except for the amount we have to leave in to maintain soil fertility, because that again becomes part of our process. So energy cane, over 8 months, we're getting a deliverable feedstock. And they will pass the EPA cellulosic tests. As far as we know, we haven't done much in terms of nitrogen addition. At some point we will have to, I'm sure, but we started in new lands and we didn't even bother to fertilize it at the time, and we've been going that way. We'll know what happens over years. Sweet sorghum, it's an annual crop, has to be planted. Contains sugar juice, starch in a seed head, and biomass, fiber. It has a 90 to 120 day crop cycle, depending on what hybrids you're using. We're getting our hybrids from Cirrus, they're supplying them. Gross, we picked it because A, it's sugar containing, and B, the gross structure is similar to sugar cane. So we can use the same harvesting systems. We're not trying to reinvent the harvesters, even if John Deere would like us to. It's widely grown across the southern U.S., can grow anywhere that you grow grain sorghum, actually. So it could go further north. We've calculated up about 6,000 acres where we'd be required to sustain 3-month processing plant of the scale of the plant, so we've engineered up. This just shows you some of the pictures of the various hybrids. And as you might expect, the 150-day hybrid looks a lot better than the 90-day hybrid. But the other question is low input. What we found with sweet sorghum, we do okay if we take the fallow time and plant clover. That covers enough of our nitrogen to put the sweet sorghum back, so we can at least go down with the nitrogen input. Herbicide, pesticide is another question. We have two issues with sweet sorghum. Because of the seed heads, it's fairly heavy, and we get some pretty hefty thunderstorms here. It lodges reasonably badly. The other thing is we detected ergot in it right now. So it's not as nice a crop for us as the energy cane is, but it still fills a gap. So crop comparisons, pretty straightforward. We're not putting any ag inputs. We've got 7 months harvest time with energy cane, 3 months with sweet sorghum. There's 10 months. One planting for energy cane for how many years, I don't know. I have to plant every year for sweet sorghum. Look at 1,000 tons, acres per 1,000 ton a day factory, 8,000 for energy cane, and 6,000 for sweet sorghum. Obviously, the energy cane is a lot higher tonnage per acre than the sweet sorghum. Both will grow in non-traditional regions and give some dry tons per acre, conservatively 10 and anywhere from 1 to 9 with the other. Okay, what's it worth? That's obviously a key question for anybody who wants to do anything. I took some very conservative estimates. I took the price of sugars at 8 cents a pound, which is the price, which used to be the price of sugar and molasses. It's up to 16 cents a pound right now. And I took $65 a ton for the biomass, which some of the mills will say will pay. If you pay us that, we'll let you come and get it. So the DOE says $120 a dry ton is probably what we're going to be looking at. And then if you look at the value and take the number of tons and to do the simple arithmetic, you're going to find out the energy cane for sugars, simple sugars alone, not the cellulosics, is it worth about $450 an acre. If you can include the cellulosics, the gross value, the value which includes everything now, including the biomass as well as the sugar. If you take the 450 plus the biomass value, you're going to get about $950 per acre on energy cane. If you can convert the cellulosics to sugars, the whole thing turns into about $1,500 per acre. Sweet sorghum is much less, but this gives us a starting point in terms of, is this going to be economical to do or not? Is there land available? We've done a pretty extensive survey for three states looking at what crops are where and what the transportation locations are and that sort of thing, and rated them in terms of where there's so-called idle cropland. It's all obviously going to depend on the ultimate value of what you're going to be putting in crop, whether it'll displace something or not. But the heavy green acres is where it's most likely to start in terms of these new crops coming in. And depending on as we go down, it will change. Okay, you've got a crop. What are you going to do with it? We need sustainable production. That looks pretty good. You need to harvest. We know how to harvest. We know what we get out of it. You need to deliver it somewhere. We're looking at a sugar mill type operation, not at sugar mills, because there's no way a commercial mill is going to do this sort of thing and interfere with their business. You need a process. Well, since these look like sugar crops, we can process in a similar manner. That's giving us an intermediate product, which is sugar syrups. This can be shipped anywhere in the country. We're not looking at building a fuel refinery next to each of these plants. We're looking at building a supply chain which will take these sugars to other factories. and we have biomass. And the question is, what do we do to that? We're working both on the conversion and whether part of it, of course, will go to fuel the plants, because everything will be biomass-powered in the first place. And then conversion to fuels. We have industrial, I'll speak on that a little more. We have some industrial partners who have processes for conversion of these sugars into various types of fuel products. Harvesting. We looked at harvest. We looked at weight loss on delivery. You know, how long is it going to take the plant to process? What are you losing in weight? It looks pretty decent. It looks very much like sugar cane losses and what we get in the harvest is we're doing billets, same sort of thing. We have a small processing plant at the university, does about 5 tons a day. It allows us to fix the problems that we've seen when you shift from one crop to another. Just because they look similar doesn't mean they process similarly. So there are some shifts that you have to do in how you handle things between sweet sorghum and energy cane and commercial sugar cane. There, A is not B. And we make syrup out of it. That we can do. We know how to make the syrups. Now that's from the simple sugars. Okay, this is the sort of thing you get in the sugars. What's most important, I want you to look at, is the ash number. Because the ash numbers are high. And that's not acceptable for one of the processes we're using. So we had to look at that closely. This is a breakdown on what sort of ash was in there. We have a process now where we get that ash down to almost nothing. In fact, and color too. We wind up with a white sugar syrup. That white sugar syrup is comparable to liquid sugars produced from starch. So it can go to a lot of different markets other than fuel as well. The fuel, we've got two uses for fuel, one of which is one of our sponsors, shall we say, is Virent. It's a company which has catalytic processing for converting sugars to jet fuel directly. What it does is basically it strips the oxygens off and then links the carbon backbones together. And the de-ashed stuff works well, and we're proceeding further with that. The other one is a startup company which is doing and has developed, with our help, a continuous butanol production. We were told in the beginning of this grant, do not mention the word ethanol. It was bad news to the government. Anyway, what we have is a continuous process which uses immobilized cells, converts sugar syrups into butanol and isopropanol, and then a simple liquid-liquid extraction and distillation to make the final product. So, the other technologies, of course, that we're looking at is what do you do with the biomass? And we're looking at a standard type of process. Basically, we're taking biomass out of a mill. We're pre-treating it with chemicals, usually dilute ammonia, very similar to what DuPont is doing, and hydrolyzing it with enzymes. But we're not going ahead with a fermentation then. All we're doing now is concentrating it back down to a syrup, which we can blend in with the other syrup and sell the whole mass. We looked at, I won't go in detail on this, I think you'll throw me out on time in a few minutes. We did settle on ammonia, we looked at a number of other things. It is still a more pricey operation to make these syrups than it is to just squeeze it out of a plant. So that has to do with the economics of what's going to work. And the basic process we're using is a dilute ammonia pretreatment, a hydrolysis, and then because most of these hydrolytic processes make a bunch of fermentation inhibitors, furfurals, et cetera, from breakdown from the hemicellulose and lignin products and so forth, we had to develop a detoxification method, which we are at that stage, and then evaporate it back and you make your syrup and just blend it in with the other. Okay, one other thing fell out of this. Energy cane, sweet sorghum, sugar cane, has somewhere between 1 and 2% of the solids as an organic acid, aconitic acid. And it is simply comes out of our clarification because we use a calcium clarification as calcium aconitate crystals. So we can separate that. And it used to be made commercially from sugarcane. The question is, can we make money out of it? It's similar to citric acid in structure, so it can go into most things that citric acid do. And that includes things like plastics, which are food packing films, antimicrobial, slow release, all of these sort of things. And we initially started with the idea of tissue engineering, biodegradable plastics, and we have some of those. This shows you some aconitic acid plastics, small samples. There's a color differential, but we've shifted away from that right now because we find that citric acid works very well to replace bisphenol, which is a plasticizer used in all your water bottles and everybody's trying to get rid of. And we can make a very nice plastic out of that. So, this is our overall picture. Crops to biomass plus sugar syrups plus aconitic acid. Biomass to power, you could burn it. You can make fuels out of it. You can take the sugar syrups and you can make fuels out of it. And you can take the aconitic acid and make plastics out of it. There are a lot of people involved in this project. There's probably 50 to 75 researchers involved. And I think we've come a long way from starting from nothing. Thank you.
Questions for them?
Yes.
The differences in leaf biomass between your sweet sorghum and your energy cane?
Mm-hmm. There's a lot more leaf in the sweet sorghum, first off. Yeah, and that's one of the reasons they never bothered with it for sugar, because getting rid of the leaves and the harvesting is a pain. And you wind up with a different bulk density and hauling it in. That's another question. When we look at taking the biomass from the field, do we leave that there or do we collect it all? What's the balance? Yeah. It's okay if we're going for the cellulosics too.
Yeah.
And we want the leaves. If we weren't going for the cellulosics, yeah, we'd leave, try and leave them in the field. So it's a hauling cost. It depends on it. Okay, I have a cost estimation and the two. I have a cost estimation from the time it's delivered into the processing. I don't have a cost estimation because I don't have a cost on the production cost for the farmer. And we still have to factor in a profit for the farmer and a profit for the factory. So I can tell you what it costs the sugars. And I can tell you, but I don't want to tell you. Simply because you hold me to it. Yeah, in the end, fuel is a question of price, and to be honest, the current price of fuel, I think biofuel has to go down in value or as a loss leader. And we're looking at things like butanol as a fine chemical feedstock for other industries instead.
Don, can you kind of just speak on a national level your assessment of commercial feasibility of lignocellulosic work and timetables? I hear a lot about plants under construction in the U.S., as many as 10, and everybody keeps
There's two or three right now.
Mm-hmm.
DuPont is the big one. Most of them are all focused on corn stover, and nobody's releasing the economics on it, but I suspect all of these are add-on to corn milling operations. So the bulk of the money is going to come from the normal corn milling ethanol operations and then extra payoff from the government or something for doing cellulosics, a potential cellulosic. There is an awful lot of effort gone in and people making money now on just burning the cellulose, i.e. pellets. And that is generated primarily in Europe by their greenhouse gas rules. We are making a lot of pellets out of bagasse right now in Louisiana. There's at least two to three companies doing that, plus people doing it out of wood and shipping it to Europe. There's a lot of questions one can raise on whether this is really good or bad or whatnot, but it's the way it is right now. Liquid fuels, ethanol is a terrible liquid fuel. It's got maybe half the BTU value of gasoline. And the whole thing, if as a liquid fuel, you got to look at weight you're carrying around in the car versus the energy output you do to running. So it means your mileage per gallon changes a lot. Butanol is a better liquid fuel. It works better with diesel, actually. Biodiesel is an established area, but it's run out of feedstock. We only have so much chicken waste and McDonald fry oil and that sort of thing, and so we've got a limitation on that. There is a big growing market in aviation fuel, mainly because if you're going to fly an airplane from the U.S. to Europe, you have to meet the European standards and rules. And so there's pushing more and more for aviation fuel, which, again, now we're going jet fuels, which is closer to diesel or kerosene than, say, ethanol is. It's all economics in the end.
Great. Thank you very much.